We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
To shortstop, Baez Ibañez. Talk to you soon. 6-4-3 on the double play, and the Tigers win the opener.
Travel safely and get your rest anyway.
Thank you.
And I will see you back home.
Any final thoughts on tonight?
Yeah, shall just, we just say, look, one of those nights where you don't have really anything together. A rare night for Gio. Walking way too many guys, and we'll try it again tomorrow.
Good morning, everybody. It is Mully and Haw here on 670 The Score, except it's Spiegs and Gabe Ramirez right here with you. We're going to talk a lot of Kyle Hendricks and what that game was like last night at Wrigley. I was there. We'll do that just a little bit later in the hour. And top of next hour, Ron Coomer is going to join us. Really looking forward to talking to Coom. I love that dude. Towards the final part of this hour, we'll talk a little NFC North as the Bears resume OTAs a little bit later on. They're working out at Halas Hall. Still with some of those absent players, Jalen Johnson, Eddie Jackson, Darnell Mooney, Nate Davis. Also later in the show, Lamont Pope from the Tribune about the White Sox, and Mark Schanowski will talk Bulls and NBA playoffs with us at the top of the nine. But Gabe, we were talking big picture White Sox and wanted to open the phone lines at 312-644-6767. That's the phone number. So hop on in as we talk kind of big picture White Sox, what they did wrong in getting here, what they did right in getting here but isn't working out, and how much of that is on Rick Hahn specifically, who says, of course, put it on me, put it on me. And we can also talk about this White Sox team right here in this moment who got a really bad performance from Lucas Giolito last night, and it cost them. Again, if you want to text the show, you can do that as well. The text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. And that number, just like the phone number, is 312-644-6767. Here's Lucas Giolito from last night talking about all the walks, and there were seven of them.
Never thought I'd be walking seven guys in a game. I mean, it's unacceptable. Team's going good. You know, want to set the series off on the right start. Did that in the first inning, but lost feel, and I didn't get it back. So it's one of those ones where, like, I could, like, dive into it and get analytical, but I'd rather just flush it and move on because I've been throwing the ball well. Yeah, it's just kind of like this tough aberration with control.
So that's Lucas Giolito, tough aberration with control. Just didn't have the feel and never got it back.
And I got to be honest, you know, listen, I have my fair share of times on the mound at my 10-year-old league over at Churchill Park on Damon and Armitage. And I can tell you from experience that, you know, sometimes you just can't find the strike zone. You know what I mean? It's comparable, right?
I think so.
Chicago Park District League. And
if I can talk about my flag football career as a center and nose tackle with the mighty Sequoias in college as the reigning center here currently on the Score air staff, then you could talk about your 10-year-old league.
You know what pressure is. That's Matt Spiegel. But like when you're looking at a lot of these walks, they weren't at bats where guys were battling and then Giolito just ended up, you know, walking. There were a couple like straight 4-pitch walks, 5-pitch walks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he just didn't have his command, and that's understandable. But I love what Giolito said. Hey, man, we can get into analytics. We could do all this stuff, but I'm going to chalk it up as a wash and just say, hey, man, I just didn't have my stuff today. And I think that's okay. It'd be one thing if Giolito had some sort of long stretch of games that were kind of unpredictable, but he was pitching really well.
He was for pitching his last really well. Games. I did not think he was going to be as good as he has been.
Same.
I'd started the year thinking about him as a fifth starter on this team, you know, with Clevinger probably going to give you a little bit more consistency. But Giolito has been better. He's been better than that. But, you know, he talked about the rotation overall before we take a phone call here. He talked about the rotation overall and rightly pointed out that the starters have been going pretty good.
Starting staff, we've been doing a fantastic job until I screwed that up today. So, you know, let these other guys pick me up the rest of the series and give it another go back home. But, I mean, done nothing but amazing things to say about the whole group, the whole starting group, what guys have been, you know, working through behind the scenes and then, you know, coming out, you know, really just doing such a nice job setting the tone and pitching deep into games, helping our bullpen out. So, you know, I'll get back on that track next time around.
So he knows Michael Kopech has figured something out that seems to be very special, which we can talk about at some point. Dylan Cease was real good his last time, said he feels like everything's starting to kind of sync up. You mentioned Jesse Schultens, who in a bulk appearance gave you five real
good
innings.
Loved it right after Jimmy Lambert came in to give the inning. But you're right. I mean, guys are pitching well. I mean, listen, Giolito, 8 straight starts of giving you at least 6 innings. Like, are we not allowed to give him the outlier right there? Like three innings, you know, you go, you still have 4 Ks.
Yeah, I know. It's baseball.
You know, it's baseball, right? It's going to happen. You can't go the whole season doing that. But I mean, the rotation is at least better than what they started the season at. And that's all you could hope for.
Yeah. Overall, still at this point, 20th in MLB as a starting rotation, the Chicago White Sox with an ERA of 4.71, but it has been better recently. All right, we're taking your phone calls and your texts at 312-644-6767. Paul is in Valpo, and Paul is on 670 The Score. What has happened that has led the White Sox to right here where they are, Paul?
Good morning, fellas. Yeah, I mean, you look at the draft picks. I mean, you go back to probably Carlos Rodon as the last draft pick, and they've all been fairly high. But you look at specific years, I believe it was 18-19 where you get Nick Madrigal at the 4 pick, and the next year Andrew Vaughn. Now a lot of bad stuff said on the score about Nick Madrigal on both sides of town. But if you look at Andrew Vaughn, he's a negative WAR player. I know Steve Stone always, you know, spouts out how many RBIs he has so far this year, but he's a negative WAR career player. He's 25 years old. Chris Bryant, by that time, who was picked 2nd, not 3rd, had already won an MVP and a Rookie of the Year. I mean, I understand he was out of position for a while, but now they moved LeBreu out of town. Andrew Vaughn is one of the biggest, I guess, you know, signs of why this thing has went so wrong. You get the back-to-back, a 3rd pick overall in the draft and a 4th pick overall in the draft. Andrew Vaughn, I mean, when are people going to start talking about how much he's underachieved?
The last hour is the answer to that question.
6 o'clock, yeah, we definitely talked about that.
Thank you for the call, Paul. Yeah, one of the pick 6 questions was, is Andrew Vaughn getting a pass for what he's been doing? What were the numbers on Andrew Vaughn? It was hitting
233. He's on pace to hit less homers than he did last year, which is he only hit 17. Mm-hmm. He's on pace to strike out much more than he did last year. You know, so, you know, those two things, you know, put together, it's just you just need more from Andrew Vaughn, which is obvious, and it just sucks that you're not getting it.
Yeah, and he's right about that draft. And I was looking back at that draft in 2019. Because Andrew Vaughn was 3rd in that draft behind Adley Rutschman and Bobby Witt Jr. You know, his 5th in that draft is Riley Green, who is a terrific center fielder and left-handed hitter for
but
the Detroit
Tigers. But you had Luis Robert Jr.
I know.
It's like, that's what the Sox do. Instead of bringing in guys to compete and find out who's best, it's like, no, we have someone there already.
Yeah. I mean, a power-hitting first baseman in the top 5 has to be truly great to ever be worth it. Because it's just not where you historically draft that particular skill set, because a lot of people can play that position and learn, and if the power's there, then you know you can get that from a lot of different people. So I mean, you look at that draft, and there's Corbin Carroll went 16 to the Diamondbacks. That is a 5-tool, extremely skilled outfielder. There's, you know, Brett Beatty, who's a real good young third baseman for the Mets. You saw him if you were watching the Cubs and the Mets last night. Josh Jung is a real good young third baseman for the Rangers. C.J. Abrams appears to be finally kind of breaking out in Washington as a shortstop after being a Padres draft pick at number 6. And, you know, it's not a great-looking draft pick. That is for damn sure. And if you don't hit on your draft picks when you're having your bad years in the rebuild, it can come back to bite you in the ass. This is Mike in LaGrange on the White Sox offense. What's up, Mike? How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. So two of the things driving me crazy about the White Sox is their propensity to make these nobody pitchers look like Tom Glavin. Like yesterday, Fiedo, on my fantasy team, I picked up that guy just because he was good to start against the White Sox. The second thing is they might have the worst leadoff hitter in the MLB. Tim Anderson was supposed to be billed as change the game, the next star in the MLB, and he's fallen flat on his face. And you could say, you know, you could put a lot of that to injury, but you know what? Your best ability is your availability. He has failed spectacularly in that area.
I appreciate the question. I'll tell you this. You know, Fiedo, let's be very honest. Guy's 6'5", 225. All right? He's a monster. And he was the 18th pick in the draft. So it's not like we're talking about some slouch that just came in and, you know, you weren't necessarily sure what you were going to get. Didn't have the best. He only had a couple of starts this season. So, I mean, but I do agree with you. The Sox have struggled for the last decade or so against guys that are making their first start in the big leagues. Maybe because they haven't seen him before, but it seems as though that happens every single time. And then TA, I mean, I'll be the TA apologist. I mean, he's having a bad year. The guy batted 318 for like five straight years. You get, you know, and he's in a slump, not feeling well. You know, he's dealing with all the drama surrounding him and the team. And I mean, I get it, but you know, he's the type of guy also that can get you a 20 game hitting streak and, you know, find his way back up to the 280, 290 range.
He's supposed to be bouncing back from all of that, from a bad year and a tough injury and the personal stuff like you're talking about, supposed to be bouncing back from that as of right now. And the OPS sits at 563 for Tim Anderson. He's been starting to feel it a little more and show it a little bit. He's got a hit now in three straight games, four out of five, and did have a stretch in the middle of May, including that Cleveland series at home where he had a bunch of hits. But like, man, that spark has not been there consistently, and I hope it is back. I hope the health is back. There's been a couple moments where he has driven the ball, but like, if you're actually watching real close, I think Tim Anderson is on the upswing back from the injury, and seemingly from a swag perspective, from a dark place. You know, he said the other day, "I'm still the best player on the field." Like,
I love that.
Yeah, he has to have that.
Yeah.
He thrives on that, and then the whole team thrives on that.
Spiegs, what would you welcome a temporary slide down the order from first to maybe like seventh, just for a game or two? Give somebody else a shot at the top of the order, like because you think it might be able to do something. You know, you get, because Buck Showalter was talking, they were talking about that with Jose Abreu and, you know, how he hasn't been performing particularly well. And so they're saying, okay, well, maybe they move him back. But Buck Showalter Dusty Baker doesn't want to do that in order to, you know, to shake things up. He wants to give him the credit he deserves as an MVP type guy. But I think, like, maybe, you know, hey, why not? T.A., you know, hey, bro, you know what we're going to do today? You know, you're batting second today.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, public embarrassment can work. But I don't know that he needs that right now. Maybe there have been times that he needs it. I don't know if it doesn't seem to me that the focus and the effort is an issue right now for TA. I was calling for that for Luis Robert for about a week and a half before Grifol did it, before he sat him down when it became very obvious. And public embarrassment can do a lot. Javi Baez, who you watched last night, Javi Baez got benched in the middle of a game, and that public embarrassment forced him to attack things in a different way, and he is now, he's got the lowest strikeout rate of his career.
Really?
Javi Baez right now.
Oh, shout out Javi Baez.
Yeah, he has perked up quite a bit, especially since then. And their GM, the former Cub staffer, says that public embarrassment for Javi Baez and that benching was a big turning point for that team, and says so. So I'm a fan of that. I'm an advocate for that. I don't know that it's the right thing right now. We'll be getting to Kyle Hendricks and the Cubs in our next segment. For anybody wondering about that debut last night, that is coming up. In the meantime, back to the phone lines we go. This is Josh and Joliet on the Score. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Josh, I'm good. You're on the Score. What you got?
I have an idea of how we could, about, you know, what they did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What they did wrong was they should have redone their scouting department when they decided to rebuild.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I think that goes hand in hand with what I talked about towards the end of last hour. They do not scout and draft and develop well with consistency. Here's a text. White Sox built up a large power supply of DH types, but very few middle infielders. Now, with the rule changes, they got caught. They did not develop enough pitching either. Getz is player development. It's as much his fault as Hans. Whoever decided on the player development path that they went on, some of those hires have not worked, and they haven't done enough hires from outside. Nick Hostetler did not work out, and then Getz has not worked out. But the good news is that he'll be handed the entire keys to the whole thing as the next guy up
very soon
at some point this year or after.
I will say to that text message, I mean, it is frustrating to see the lack of development, and that's a word that I've been harping on lately, and it's because you see other teams getting the best out of their players. And when you see something that the Sox are lacking in outside of their starters, right? Because, again, that's how the Sox operate. We're going to, here's our five starters. That's it. This is what we got. We got nothing else after this.
Yeah.
And so then that's where the word development comes into play because, you know, of course there are arms in the minor leagues, but, you know, you cannot pinpoint three, four guys that you can say these are the next guys. And I think to me that's the frustrating part as a Sox fan where, you know, you've been kind of doing patchwork at the back end of your starting rotation for the last couple of years, bringing in guys off the street or, you know, hoping for a wily vet to give you some innings, you know, here and there. So to me, that's the biggest frustration as a Sox fan is the lack of development of their players. And Speaks, you touched on it earlier, where there's just that there is no consistency from the top to the bottom. And Mully and I were talking about it yesterday on the morning show about Rami Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, where he is a guy that didn't get money but like wants desperately to be at the major league level. And there are guys like that in the Cubs organization that they are like, I don't care who you just signed. I don't care who you have there. I'm good. I'm trying to perform at a high level so I can be a part of that.
Keeping young players hungry.
Yes. And the White Sox, and listen, I was all for giving, you know, Eloy and those guys the money because you wanted to keep them. It was good contracts for the team. But then you create that cog in the middle where you're like, nope, we can't get anybody else there because we've already given somebody X amount of dollars to be there.
Yeah, no, it's those contracts have not aged well. I was all for it as well. It seemed to make all the sense in the world. You know, because they preemptively did it. It gave them great cost certainty. But what they didn't do, what you need when you're going to pay people like that, you need a couple things. One, you need a system that teaches them and also holds them accountable at every level. You got to scout the person and know for sure that they're going to bust their ass and play with that hunger. And that's been a very much a question about Yoan Moncada. And it's been a question at times about Luis Robert, that they are going to be self-drivers and self-critical when the big carrot of the money is not there. But it's tricky. You do it the other way, like the Cubs did with Bryant and Rizzo and Schwarber and Contreras, and never really pay them, leave that carrot dangling. And actually, they did pay Rizzo because he came earlier, but then they didn't pay him the second time.
Right.
But, you know, and Baez, too. That's five. They had five dudes, and they were using the money to hold over them. They got resentful as people towards the end.
And then once they won, they were like, oh, damn, finally got the carrot.
They won too early for the whole thing.
Yeah.
If they didn't win in 16, they would have stayed hungry and focused in multiple ways for a couple of years. So I don't know, man. Like, then the Cubs waited too long and didn't trade those. So it's hard. It's hard to figure that part out on the human side. I don't think that there should be a consistent way you do it, like not paying any of them like the Cubs did, or paying all of them like the White Sox did. I guess now, if I'm talking about an MLB rebuild, I'd be somewhere in the middle and I'd figure out which person is motivated by which things.
And like you said, we as Chicago baseball fans, we've gone through this.
Yeah.
So we understand what best practices are, and it is somewhere in the middle.
Don't you think we're wiser as baseball fans because we've watched two rebuilds?
And other teams do it closely so that way
absolutely,
we can see the blueprint.
Hell, man, when I talk about what the Astros did or when I talk about the Rays are constantly doing, I'm informed by all the conversations I've had with Theo and Han and everybody through the years. This is Dan in Woodstock on 670 The Score. Hello, Dan.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Dylan Cease has made 101 career starts. In his first 100, 25 of those have concluded with five or fewer innings pitched and at least 95 pitches thrown.
Hmm.
That is more than anybody in baseball history through his first 100 starts.
Wow, that's fascinating. Did you do that search yourself on those terms?
Baseball Reference Play Index is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it is. All right, Dan, you're hired for Hit and Run Sunday mornings.
I'll be there filling in for Speak, so make sure you call in.
Yeah, this Sunday, Gabe's got you. Give him something. And then I'll be back in June on Sundays, and I want you to make sure you call in every week with some
other
find from the Play Index. Thank you very much. I'm sorry to report that there are no benefits for this position.
Yeah.
It's a gig economy that we're living in. So,
but you could leverage it, you know. You could leverage it on Twitter.
It's an opportunity.
Put it in your Twitter bio.
It's exposure. It's exposure, too. Like my bandmate and Tributosaurus Chris likes to say, you can die from exposure.
Yeah.
Yes. You can.
Trust me.
But that's interesting. All right, so Dylan Cease has great stuff, but he's often too wild, so sometimes he throws a lot of pitches and doesn't get past
the fifth. He sucked in the very beginning. Let's be very honest.
He did.
Like, it was
bad. Great. He was great last year.
Right. Great last year. But this first couple seasons, you were just like, oh, my gosh. It'd be like one good game, two bad ones. One good game, three bad ones.
Yeah.
And you were just waiting for him to turn it around, and he finally did. So.
Yes. He did finally do that. Hey, tune in on Memorial Day. That's Monday. We are live from 7 to 10 a.m. with Steve Rosenblum and Mike Esposito. Suckage on a Monday. 10 to 12:45 with Mark Grody. Doing middays. Groats from 10 to 12:45. And then it's the Cubs and the Tampa Rays. That's a real good organization. In town, that game will begin at 12:45. After that game, Gabe Ramirez.
Martinez, as you would say.
Oh, man. I'm never going to live that one down. Dude, I had just met you. I just met you, and I was an idiot. And it comes off a lot more racist than I believe that I am. When you mess up a Latin man's last name. I'm sorry.
But yes, I will be on after the Cubs game on Monday. I got you, Speaks. I will be on the score after the Cubs game on Monday on Memorial Day till 8 o'clock.
God, Gabe, you just broke my soul. That'll be Gabe on Monday. Hey, we'll come back. We'll talk about Kyle Hendricks' debut. I was there last night. I can tell you about what it was like from inside the building, and you'll hear from Kyle and David Ross too next on the score.
And that'll be it for Kyle Hendricks. He's made the motion to the bullpen. The left-hander Brandon Hughes will come in.
Baseball is back. And so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Kyle Hendricks will leave the game and get a nice ovation here from the crowd at Wrigley Field. His first game of the 2023 season.
Zach Zaidman on the call for 670 The Score in the Chicago Cubs Radio Network last night. Kyle Hendricks shows up, pitches, gets hit around a little bit. And gets taken out right there in the fifth inning. It is Mully and Haw on 670 The Score, but it's Matt Spiegel and Gabe Ramirez. Gabe, let's listen to Kyle Hendricks talk about his first start on the big league level. And he discussed how it felt to be back.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there was a lot of buildup to that one, obviously. And just, you know, kind of emotional day, everything building up to it. But at the end of the day, you know, just getting to this point and getting back out there was number one, huge. I can't, there's so many people behind the scenes to thank. And number one, you know, my teammates were so supportive of me the whole way, helped me so much, just having the confidence to get back out there, you know, and do my thing again. But again, then frustrating on the other hand that wasn't able to build on the momentum we've built the last two games, played two really good ball games against that team and then just never had a chance tonight. So for myself personally, after the first inning, felt much more like myself. So I'm going to take those positives that I was able to do. You know, bad contact, a couple bad hits here and there. You just got to tip your cap. So it's back to work this week. Hopefully getting my rhythm, getting my routine, have everything be normal from here on out.
So that's Kyle Hendricks talking about it. Got to take the positives out of it and just move on to the next one. That's baseball.
Yeah, and you know, when you're looking at it yesterday, I was surprised that he got up to 86 pitches. I thought to myself, you know, I thought he was only going to maybe throw three to see how he would look. I thought four and a third was a bit much prior to the game. But he did have, I mean, second inning, only threw 11 pitches. I thought that was awesome. I mean, able to bounce back. It just sucked that, you know, in the third, you know, he got the first two outs, was looking good and then just gave up the four straight singles. That was the tough part about it, right? I mean, so he just had some moments. He was able to get out of a jam in the first, you know, and minimize damage there. But I think overall it was just good to see a guy like Kyle Hendricks back on the mound. I think he is a presence for the Cubs organization. And you know, having him back there, I'm sure meant a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think it did. And I think it meant a lot to him. We're so used to thinking about him as this, like, this not a robot necessarily, but kind of a cyborg. Yeah. Is a cyborg a robot?
Half, right?
Thank you. I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know. Sounded right.
But something created to do exactly what he's supposed to do and is able to, like, just kind of keep all his emotions in check and everything like that. And just kind of be that guy and be on point. But he talked about it. Like, mentally, this was a lot.
It's the physical component of the last 11 months. Mentally, how challenging has it been to be away, you know, working through the monotony of a rehab program? Just how challenging was that aspect? Because it's the longest time you've been away in a long time.
Definitely. I think that was a lot of what I was feeling all day, kind of that buildup. It was more of that mental part. You know, you have some highs and you have some lows through this whole process. So it was just so fulfilling to finally get back out there on that field, see the fans, you know, run out on the field with my teammates, just the little things, you know. I took it all in, really. You know, you don't take that for granted. So that mental part of it, usually that's not normal. You know, you go out there and you're focused on task at hand, executing and being aggressive. So that's what I'm going to get back into now. But it was really good to just have some of those positives, get that out of the way and feel good mentally.
See, that him admitting that it was a big deal. And when he's at his best, that mental part is on lockdown.
Yeah.
And it wasn't last night.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, right? You know, you'll pitch for a year. Like, you know, the mental part, it's got to be tough because you're thinking about 20 other things probably in that moment other than let me focus on this batter, this pitch, you know, this wind up. But
trying to soak it up. He said he's like really trying to feel that moment and like enjoy it and be grateful and yada, yada. That's not how you stay on task.
No. Yesterday, Mully and I were talking about, I think Dustin or Brandon might've asked a question as to whether or not maybe his first start should have been against the Reds as opposed to the Mets. And I said, no, you won the first two games against the Mets. There's no pressure to sweep, really. So you throw Kyle Hendricks out there, and if you get a dud, it's okay. Nobody cares. But you throw him out first game of the series against the Reds, and he gets smacked around, then he might, you know, mess with his confidence a little bit there.
Yeah.
What would you think in those kinds of situations?
That's interesting. No, I mean, I think whoever it was, he was going to have to go through this.
Okay.
I think, you know, like whoever he was pitching against, I don't know that the results would have been the same against the Reds, but like he was not going to be the best version of himself. And Tommy Hotovy said as much after the game. He's like, I'm not expecting him to be in midseason form, not expecting peak Kyle. I guess that was before the game that the pitching coach talked about it. Let's hear David Ross's thoughts on Kyle Hendricks' outing last night in his first start back.
Second looked nice and clean. The third, I thought he was just a little bit of a, you know, a lot of soft contact there. You know, when I feel like when he gives up some runs or, you know, in the past, that soft contact stuff falling in and the wind blowing in today didn't help that. His ball is not hanging up long enough for us to catch him. And then like he ran out of gas a little bit there trying to get Husey to clean up his stuff. You know, they get the stolen base and the error there, and then things kind of got tack on one there and start to get out of control a little bit. You know, Rucker wasn't as sharp after some layoff there. So, but Kyle, you know, it's nice to get him back out there, get on the bump. There were some things that I think he'll want to clean up a little bit and get ready for his next start.
Yeah, so, I mean, if I'm hearing correctly, David Ross said his balls did not hang up there enough. Did you hear that?
Must have been too hot outside.
Man, that is... You ever been in a steam room?
No, I don't know where this is going, but I don't like it.
You ever seen a gladiator movie? No, I mean, so that's all right. Well, I mean, I didn't think that was a cause for concern necessarily. I mean, it's just life. It's just how it goes.
Sometimes it be like that.
Yeah. Two things that we got to do before we talk some football here on the Kyle Hendricks situation. One is we need clarity on what is a cyborg and what is a robot. Alex Kuhn, this is the most important thing you'll do all day. Alex Kuhn and Brandon Fryer on the other side of the glass. You got me? What's the difference?
Yeah, this courtesy of differencebetween.net.
I like the wow. Reference there.
Good for them.
The main difference between a cyborg and a robot is the presence of life. A robot is basically a machine that is very advanced. It is often automated and requires very little interaction with humans.
Thank you.
In comparison, cyborgs are a combination of a living organism and a machine.
Got it. So, Gabe, you were on it.
Shout out my Lane Tech education right there.
That is hot.
Put that out there.
All right. So, top favorite cyborg in the history of media.
Damn.
I'll go Terminator.
Oh, Terminator. Okay.
Yeah. I'll go. Is it Terminator or is it the cop from T2? Who blew my freaking mind,
man. You gotta love him because any character that can make you hate them, you know, then you're doing a great job acting.
Yeah, that moment when he gets shot and blasted apart, and then as liquid metal, he reformulates the torso and keeps walking, I was like, oh my God! One of the great entertainment moments of my life.
Is Chrissy Cyborg, she's a fighter, does that count?
No.
No.
I'm sorry, it does not. I'm looking for fictional
Inspector
cyborgs.
Inspector Gadget. Right?
That is a strong contribution.
Okay.
Inspector Gadget, part human and part whatever the hell else he needed to be.
RoboCop.
RoboCop is great. Absolutely.
That's a great one,
That's
Brandon.
A great one. All right. I think we became a team today. We got three tremendous cyborgs. Alex, you got a good one. Be careful. You got to add a real good one here. If you're not ready, you don't have to do it yet. Okay? You just think about it if you want.
Darth Vader.
Oh, man, that's strong.
I was trying to do it for Alex over there.
That's a top five cyborg right there. Now, there's only one spot left. It's only one spot left. They're discussing it. Alex getting help. He's new around here.
Yeah, I got some help from Brandon. Cyborg from DC.
From the DC comic universe.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay, his name is Cyborg.
I'm out. I'm not hip to it. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Right.
Hey, I just researched it. I don't know him.
Man. But there's a cyborg from the Justice League, says a texter. So maybe that's good. So what's our top five cyborgs on the fly here?
RoboCop got to be like top one, two. Like, it's hard to not have him as cyborg.
I think Darth Vader is one.
Darth Vader. Okay.
I think you nailed Darth Vader. Darth
Vader, RoboCop, one, two.
Darth Vader,
Inspector
RoboCop.
Inspector Gadget got to be top three.
I'll give you Inspector Gadget, number three. And then number four, I'm going with the metal cop in T2.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the liquid metal cop. And number five is Cyborg from the Justice League. Okay?
As an honorary mention.
That's very
for
strong.
Alex.
Alex, would you put those together and tweet that out from the official score account?
I like that.
Yep, on it.
Top five cyborgs as decided by today's morning show on 670 The Score. Thank you very much. That's excellent work out of you. You have shown your value. And then this from Kyle Hendricks. I don't know what's going on here. We get a cut sheet that has like things that they said after the game. This one is with the question, so that's good. So we'll get the whole exchange. They asked Kyle Hendricks something, and he talked about either weight gain or small shirts. So I did.
Rossi had said pregame that he was joking with you that you might have got a smaller shirt size. Wait, did you put on a lot of weight?
I really didn't put on much weight. Maybe I look a little different, but I told him to dry the shirts a few extra times. Yeah, make them smaller. No, but he's been giving me some of that. You know, again, I just, the support from everybody, the positive talk that everyone's been giving me, Rossi, my teammates, the staff, everybody all around has been such a huge support and a huge help, meant a lot to me going back out there. So now, kind of happy that that's all in the past, though. Now, you know, I just want to be my normal self, get back out there and have it be normal baseball, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, so they were giving him crap about a weight gain while he was off and rehabbing, sitting around.
I would have gained hella weight if I wasn't pitching for a year. Are you kidding me, bro? Getting checks every whatever, however often they get it.
Yeah.
I'm gaining hella weight. I'm coming back looking like Bobby Jenks.
Man, have you done that in certain times between employments?
No,
have you had that at all?
No, just during my while I've had kids. That's been my off time from life.
I understand.
So I gained weight then.
When I in my era of vague employment, when I was doing middays with Danny Parkins on the Spiegel and Parkins show, it's a very different show than the Parkins and Spiegel show we do now. And after I was sidelined, I was still on the payroll for a little while. And I was sitting at home.
Checks coming in. Good.
So I was in that Kyle Hendricks position.
Yeah. Weren't getting your steps in.
Oh, no. The steps that I got in. My wife was waking up early going to work every day. And I'm like, honey, I'm sorry.
Have a good day, honey.
I know.
I'll be right here when you get back.
You see where I am? Take a mental picture. No, it got bad. It got bad in that way. She'd call in the middle of the day. It's like, are you in the recliner?
What are you doing?
Are you in the recliner right now?
She hears the squeak. No. She hears a squeak from it. Early closes up. No,
totally. She would call, and I would, and see her call. I would get up out of the recliner. Yeah. I go walk around a little bit. Like,
why are you breathing hard, honey?
I was doing the dishes. It's difficult work around these parts. So shout out to Kyle Hendricks for not gaining the weight, and welcome back. It is Spiegs and Gabe Ramirez on 670 The Score, in for Mullion Hall. Did you tweet out the top five cyborgs yet, Alex? Are you still formulating, working on that?
I am formulating.
All right, that's excellent.
Honorable mention for 7 of 9 from Star Trek.
Sure.
Reading Rainbow Guy.
I'll give you that. Yeah. Predator. Reading Rainbow Guy. LeVar Burton. He's not 7 of 9. Seven of nine is a woman.
Oh,
yeah.
Damn. I'm looking at the picture. That's why I thought they had the little eye thing.
Yeah, well, she's related. She's the same. Maybe she's the same species as LeVar Burton's character.
I'm out. It's too far. It's gone too far on a tangent.
I like it. The metal cop from T2. That's right. Oh, what? Yes. Predator, people are saying. That's pretty good. Winter Soldier. We got a lot of them, but thank you. Our top five is filled. We thank you for your content and your content creation on the Tech Zone. By the way, we're giving away free tickets to see the Dave Matthews Band a little bit later on. And that's going to be Saturday, the 8th of July at Huntington Bank Pavilion at Northerly Island. Tickets are available at livenation.com. Be listening a little bit later on in the show, and we're going to play a song. We're going to play a Dave Matthews song. Not right now, Brandon, we're good. But when you hear a Dave Matthews song, be the sixth caller to the Scores contest line. Not right now, but when you hear it, be the sixth caller, and you will win a pair of tickets to see the Dave Matthews Band. All right, coming up next, let's talk some Bears and some NFL teams in the division. And we have an incredible stat for you that we figured out in the 6 o'clock hour that we will share, and we'll talk Bears, Vikings, Packers, and Lions in a moment.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On 670 The Score.
And the last thing, the most important piece, is we're going to take the North and never give it back.
That's the dream. That's the goal for Ryan Poles. That a pivotal moment from his introductory press conference. You've got 670 The Score. It is Matt Spiegel with you, along with Gabe Ramirez here in for Mullion Hall. All guests appear on the Busey Bank Score Hotline, building business, growing wealth since 1868. And let's go to that hotline right now for the first time this morning and talk some Bears and some NFC North with Carmen Vitale of Fox Sports, who joins us right now on The Score. Carmen, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I had a question earlier on in the day, and we did the research to figure it out. It'd be interesting if the Lions and the Bears were ever going to be the top two teams in this division. And we figured out that has happened exactly once since the division was formed in 1967. And that would be 1991, when the Lions won the division and the Bears were second. That's the only time that it has ever happened that they are the top two teams in the division. Isn't that crazy?
I wish I could say I was surprised, but I grew up in this town too, so I'm not, I can't say I'm shocked.
Is there any chance that that is the case this coming year?
It is. I think that the NFC North is one of the most wide open divisions in all of football this coming year. It really seems to be kind of anybody's game. You could make a case. In fact, I'm writing a series of articles on foxsports.com right now about how you can make a case that each of these teams could win the division. So by default, that means the Detroit Lions and the Chicago Bears this year.
Which would be crazy, Carmen. When I'm looking at this team, this Bears team, I'm trying to figure out what the best position group is, right? And it seems like, you know, there has been some additions in certain areas. But if you were to point to one, what would that be for you?
Offensive side of the ball, weirdly, I guess I would say wide receiver.
That's why I was scratching my head looking at it. I was like, damn, am I about to say the wide receiver group? Okay.
I really am. It's deep. And all of the reports coming out about how much Justin Fields has been working with Chase Claypool this offseason and the strides that he's seen Chase make. I mean, I don't think it's fair to judge Chase Claypool on what he was able to do last year, given that he came so late in the season. It wasn't even enough time to get the terminology down, much less really understand and grasp the offense. Now, both of these guys are going into this season with prior experience in this offense. It's the first time Justin Fields has been able to do that. And if he's telling me that Chase Claypool is working his butt off and he's got a big target down in the red zone with a guy like that, I'm not going to argue with him. Not to mention now you've got a true number one in DJ Moore. Darnell Mooney is hopefully going to be healthy. Those top three receivers are better than anything I can think of in recent memory for the Chicago Bears. And then you add in a guy like Bobby Tonyan in the tight ends group, who was one of Aaron Rodgers' most trusted targets in recent memory, and given even after his ACL injury. I mean, he still made some pretty tough catches for Green Bay last year, of which I was witness.
You know, it's interesting. I think Chase Claypool is a primary example of what they're trying to build for this training camp and overall for this team. A bunch of young dudes who are hungry and are being forced to compete for their jobs and their lives. You mentioned Robert Tonyan. Cole Kmet, I mean, maybe he thought he was just going to sign an extension and be anointed the tight end.
I'm from Chicago. What do you mean?
For the next 5 to 7 years.
I just graduated
years.
With my degree from Notre Dame. What are you talking about?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And maybe he still will. But he's got to look over his shoulder a little as he looks to his side with the aforementioned Robert Tonyan. Chase Claypool and Darnell Mooney on the same track in terms of contracts. They're not going to sign both those dudes, you know? So, like, and that's in multiple spots. That seems to be by design to have that young, feisty competition. And I think it's smart as you're building a team. What do you think?
That's something that we've heard Ryan Poles say over and over again is, I want to create competition at this position. I want to create competition at this position. He's doing it with the offensive line currently as well, with especially those interior spots. You've got about four guys that are competing for those interior spots along the offensive line. So I think that Ryan Poles has telegraphed to us almost every move that he's made and told us exactly why he's doing it. He's very easy to read between the lines, which is very rare for a GM, and it's something that I particularly appreciate. But that is the makings of a good foundation and a good team, and he knows that this isn't a finished product. This is a longer process. People are going to have to be a little bit more patient, but it's going to pay off because you are going to get the best guys at each position. And we've seen that too. I think the only position group on the defensive side of the ball that is in its final form, and maybe not even, is the linebacking core. Because I guess you can still say that Jack Sanborn should probably now look over his shoulder with Noah Sewell coming in.
Yep.
But you've got Jermaine Edmonds, you've got TJ Edwards. Those guys are locked. That's probably the strongest position group on that side of the ball. But again, I contradicted my own point because I'm like, no, you know what? There still is competition.
Yeah, and even Jalen Johnson, who, like Kmet, thinks of himself as a guy who should get an extension and should be here long term. They drafted Tyreek Stevenson, and maybe they need both of them. But there is a world where Johnson plays this year, and they still don't have a contract conversation, and they're going to pay Fields, and they might not be able to pay Jalen Johnson long term. It's possible.
It's possible. They also, though, have done a really good job. Ryan Poles has done a great job of allocating the amount of resources that he needs right now and while still thinking about the future. You think about the way that he did the DJ Moore trade, making sure that he got future capital, the way that they aren't going out and spending this last, whatever, $30 million of their salary cap space because they know that they might need it down the line, reworking some things, having that flexibility. I just trust the process with Ryan Poles because over the last 2 years, you have seen that he is trying to build for a foundation for sustained success. He's not trying to capture lightning in a bottle like so many teams are doing. They're selling out to get these Super Bowls. It's working, but it only works for about a year, and then the bill comes due.
Yeah.
So that's not what Ryan Poles is trying to do, and I really, really appreciate that.
Got to give him some credit in the beginning and to be able to trust him, Carmen. I think absolutely right on that. You know, the money left over, I talked about that at length last year. I was like, guys, he's not going to spend every dollar that's in the cavern. Like, he's going to leave some of it there, and so we were having conversations about that. Carmen, you also touched on a second ago, you know, the transparency of Ryan Poles, and I think it's something that we all welcome, right? It's something that we're not used to. But do you think he's being transparent with Justin Fields in regards to his future with the Chicago Bears? Like, is he saying, all right, bro, I gave you all these pieces, so Next year, I got two firsts, and you never know what I might do with them. You're like, do you think he's being that transparent with Justin Fields, or is it more of a, hey, you're our guy, you see what I've given you, and we trust and believe in you moving forward?
What he's done is just rid Justin Fields of any excuses to not do well. And he is telling us that. He's telling Justin that. He's been in constant communication, too, with Justin Fields, the way that he's talked about their relationship in this draft process, even in the DJ Moore. Like, Ryan Poles' first call after they traded for DJ Moore was Justin Fields. Mm. That is telling him, listen, this is what I'm doing for you. I want you to do well. But I'm also getting rid of any excuses for you not to do well. So if you don't, I'm going to be justified in, no pun intended, I didn't mean to use that word. But I'm gonna
no one picked up on the Justin Timberlake album reference right there, Carmen, except for me. I got you, though.
Justin Fields, justified, you know, Justin Timberlake, it's all sorts of Justin. But he's going to be in the right if he has to move on from Fields if Fields doesn't do well this year. And that's the reality of the business. But again, I think that he's been very transparent in how this all works for Justin Fields. What I am encouraged by is not only the pieces they've now put around Justin Fields, but the fact that Luke Getsy has started building an offense last year that is tailored to Justin Fields. So they are going all in on him. They want him to do well. And this town is so hungry for a good quarterback that the bar isn't terribly high for Justin Fields to do well and for this to be a really functional and good offense.
Just 30 seconds left, Carmen. You do cover the whole division. You got a feeling on if Jordan Love is going to be the next in a long line of Packers quarterbacks to destroy the Bears' soul?
Yeah, listen, like I said, I grew up here. I grew up a Bears fan. That organization has been too good for too long and had too many all-stars under center for me to think that this isn't a repeat of that. Jordan Love is going into this season with, like, better equipped than 99% of quarterbacks to go into their first starting season. He has been able to sit behind Aaron Rodgers for 3 years and observe him at the very least. But I don't want to make any snap judgments on OTAs. I think that there's going to be a learning curve. Obviously, you can't come in and fill Aaron Rodgers' shoes right away. But I think that they have to believe in him. The Packers wanted to move on, and they're not going to want to move on unless they believe in Jordan Love.
It's learned cynicism is what it is. It's well earned. Carmen Vitale of Fox Sports, thanks so much for the time. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, guys.
You got it. It is Matt Spiegel and Gabe Ramirez here in for Mully and Haw. The great Ron Coomer, the best partner a broadcaster could ever have. And I'll get the chance to be in that booth with him on Sunday. That's why you're in for me on Hit and Run.
That's awesome. Okay.
Get to do pregame and postgame and the fifth inning of play-by-play on Sunday.
That's pretty tight.
On the Cubs Radio Network. But we'll talk about the Cubs and Kyle Hendricks and check in with Coom next right here on 670 The Score.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.